Committee on Business, Labor, and Economic Development, Wednesday, February 7th, 3 p.m., hearing room C.
LC 2960 and 3105.
Senator Gordley moves LC 2960 and LC 3105 to be introduced as committee bills. Any discussion? Objections? The order. Okay. Open a work session on Senate Bill 184. We heard this one the other day, moved it the other day.
That was a practice vote.
Yes. Now we'd like to do it for real. Senator Gordley.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 184 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Gordley moves Senate Bill 184 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Objections? So ordered. And Senator Metzger will still be the carrier. We ought to notify him about that, I suppose.
I already did.
Okay.
That's part of the practice.
Thank you. Work session closed. Let's open a public hearing on House Bill 2221. Mr. Putman, when you're ready, introduce the bill to us.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I had the pleasure of working on this bill two sessions ago, but we didn't get it quite all done. There's some obsolete language in the statute that needs to go, and the labor commissioner is here today to tell us why.
Okay, one up, Jack.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jack Roberts. I'm the commissioner of the Oregon Bureau of Labor and Industries. As Mr. Putnam pointed out, this is a long-running effort to eliminate a failed regulatory scheme. In 1975, at a time when there was concern that movie productions in Oregon might be hiring a lot of people, and the concern was how do we make sure that people who are hired are treated fairly, they created a producer-promoter position that was going to be licensed by the state of Oregon. In the quarter century that followed, this was never invoked. No one ever got a license. There were movies that have been made here. It's never been enforced. There have been no complaints under it. So two sessions ago, we decided that we might as well get rid of it. The legislature did that, but unfortunately didn't quite remove all of the references to it. Came back last session to get rid of what we thought were the last remaining ones. Lo and behold, there are still a couple of definitions that slipped through. So now it is our hope that we can put this finally to rest by removing the definitions of producer-promoter, production, and producer-promoter from the different sections here that reference it but have no longer any substantive regulatory effect.
Thank you. Any questions? Lot? Close the public hearing on House Bill 2221. Open work session.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2221 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Gordley moves House Bill 2221 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. It was my only discussion. It was one of the few bills we've seen without an emergency clause. Are we sure this isn't an emergency? It's been going on for 25 years. Thank you. Further discussion? Objections? So ordered.
Mr. Chairman, I'll just notify the committee, too. This is our first bill from the other chamber, and I'm required before I drop it to check to see if there are any other statutes that impinged upon these particular ones before we can actually drop it. I think the odds of that are very low indeed.
Okay. Anybody like to volunteer to carry it? Senator Corcoran wants to carry a producer-promoter bill. Now, we're not promoting wrestling or anything like that, Senator Corcoran.
I will carry it with the enthusiasm that I've learned from my good colleague, Senator Atkinson, yesterday, who put the entire chamber to sleep carrying a bill on some grass seed thing.
I was simply avoiding questions.
Thank you very much. Close work session. Now we get to what everybody's here for.
That's right.
Mr. Chair, before Jack Roberts leaves, I just want to acknowledge and thank you for your recent conversations and work with the Oregon Civil Rights Council and the Portland chapter of the NAACP. Really appreciate that you were willing to sit down at the table, and I think some very good working relationships are being built because of your willingness and your leadership. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to
talk to
this. Thank you. Thank you. For the committee's information, in case you haven't looked at the bills we have in committee, we have another bill that is introduced at the request of the commissioner to delete obsolete agencies, namely his own. So we may be taking that up here before the session's over.
That'll be a problem, Mr. Chair.
You're kidding me.
Thank you, Jack.
Thank you.
Bills and yesterday now. We will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 461. Mr. Putt.
Mr. Chairman, the current law allows for certain non-retail distributions of basically gas and diesel fuel. However, there is currently a 2,400 gallon a year minimum that users of this service have to have. This bill would eliminate that minimum. I don't have a fiscal impact statement from the fiscal office yet, but I have preliminary data which would indicate that the department would need one additional staff person because they're expecting roughly a doubling of the number of accounts. They're required by law to do a performance audit, I suppose you would call it, of 5% of the accounts out there. So they would need additional staff for that. But also, because there's a $250 annual fee for the license plus an additional $5 annual per card member, they're expecting increased revenues in the $300,000 to $400,000 range. The reason for that range is, I believe, their preliminary figures are based on 24 months, and this bill, not having an emergency clause, would apply for only 18 months. So, bottom line, there would be a net increase in revenues as a result of this bill. But that, again, is preliminary. It's not your official fiscal impact statement, which is still in progress.
Thank you. Do we have a sign-up sheet?
No, sir. I don't know. We'll find out in a moment. There is a representative of the fire marshal here, should there be any technical questions on the issue.
Okay. Was Senator Hannon contacted? It seems he wanted to speak to his own bill.
I did not contact his office. Here we go.
He does not? Okay. Thank you. Brian, are you up first? You got a couple of people you want to bring with you, or?
One person that will meet at the following meeting.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Brian Bowe, and I'm here this afternoon representing the Oregon Commercial Fueling Coalition. The Commercial Fueling Coalition is an aggregation of some small independent cardlock dealers and some agricultural co-ops, primarily from rural locales. We'd like to thank you for hearing Senate Bill 461 today. We believe it is a bill that is of vital importance, both to small business generally and to small petroleum marketers specifically. For the committee's background on this, I'll just give a very, very brief description of how we arrived at the current statute and the current criteria that we have. In 1991, there was the perception of an emerging crisis in the petroleum industry caused by the federal requirements regarding underground storage tanks. In an effort to address that, Senate Bill 1215 was developed. So the substance of Senate Bill 1215 was primarily a financial assistance program for petroleum marketers to meet the environmental requirements of the federal requirements. But tacked on to Senate Bill 1215 was some unrelated petroleum marketing issues. And one of those issues regarding commercial fueling, or as we refer to it as cardlock, is the subject contained in Senate Bill 461 that we seek to change today. The bill passed back in 1991 contained a section that attempted to define what a commercial customer was and who was eligible to use a cardlock. and that criteria was otherwise straightforward and objective, with one crucial exception. And that exception is the sole subject of Senate Bill 461 today, the requirement that a business purchase 2,400 gallons annually to qualify for cardlock access. We believe that we can establish today that not only is a 2,400-gallon requirement arbitrary and unfair, but it has served as an unnecessary and harmful barrier to small businesses that seek nothing more than to achieve greater control over their fuel usage and cost. What has become apparent to us over the past 10 years is that the 2,400-gallon purchase requirement has had a disproportionately negative impact on smaller, primarily rural, cardlock operators. There has been significant attrition in their ranks. Since the law took effect in early 1991, a number of them have closed their doors. And this is in addition to the literally hundreds of businesses that have been forced off a system because they didn't use 2,400 gallons of gas annually. One of the concerns surrounding the discussions back in 1991 was how the potential loss of retail stations and restricting access to cardlock might affect availability of fuel in rural areas. And while the legislation attempted to address this by providing for hardship exemptions for communities 10 miles or more from a retail station, by allowing those persons access to cardlock without restrictions, it did not foresee the hardships caused by limited availability. And when I say limited availability, I mean those areas that are served by a retail station, but a retail station that does not keep 24-hour and does not provide 24-hour access. In those areas, many businesses find that in addition to the other benefits provided by cardlock, they need access to fuel at those times when the local gas retailer may not be open for business. And this is a real issue that we think clearly illustrates the negative impact of the 2,400-gallon requirement, that is, lack of availability and access to fuel at all hours. So our response is Senate Bill 461. Again, back in 91, the original goal was to establish an eligibility criteria for commercial fueling customers that was enforceable. The goal was to prohibit commercial fueling from crossing the line into becoming a de facto form of retail self-service gasoline. Senate Bill 461 maintains these critical distinctions by leaving intact the core of these original provisions of eligibility. Under current law, and under Senate Bill 461, if it becomes law, to be eligible for cardlock, a business must certify, one, that they have a federal employer identification number or its equivalent, two, that the vehicle into which the fuel is dispensed is owned by the business, three, that the persons accessing the facility have completed safety training, and four, each customer must pay a $5 annual fee, and this funds the enforcement program that Mr. Putman alluded to earlier in his introductory remarks. All of those requirements must be certified in writing and are subject to audit by the state fire marshal. Violations are punishable by a civil penalty of up to $500 per violation. Clearly, this is a rigorous and enforceable set of requirements, and one which I emphasize we do not seek to change. We should keep a regulatory structure. It should be enforceable. There should be a distinction between non-retail and retail customers. Our goal is simple. We ask that the one arbitrary and discriminatory element of these requirements be removed, the 2,400-gallon annual usage provision. That is the sum total of Senate Bill 461. It's a small change, but a change that we believe will have a very beneficial impact. It will reorient our policy as it relates to commercial fueling to recognize the importance of small business. It will open the same tools for cost control and accounting to small business, now only available to companies who use more than 2,400 gallons of gas annually. It's our contention that if the committee carefully considers these issues, it will reach the same conclusion that smaller cardlock operators realized long ago. Discriminating and limiting access based on the number of gallons a business uses per year is unsupportable and, most importantly, unfair and damaging to small business. We would like to change this statute so that Oregon's policy in this regard enables all businesses to better control and account for their fuel purchases rather than arbitrarily preventing it. We urge your support for the bill. And I would like to point out, if I might, Mr. Chair, in some remarks about the attachments that I have submitted with my testimony. In some of the discussions surrounding the bill, there have been issues raised about a potential constitutional challenge or other legal challenges. We submitted a question to legislative counsel, and their response is attached in your packet. And their answer is an unequivocal no, that they don't foresee a problem in that regard. And I wanted to alert the committee to that, should that become an issue in the discussion later. Secondly, in your packet is a list of businesses that have been eliminated from access to commercial fueling this year. And we did this for one reason. The list, by the way, is far more voluminous. This is just a very, very small sampling. But to try to put a face on this, so you can look at these different company names from around Oregon, and these are just small companies who were making access and utilizing commercial fueling facilities in the course of running their businesses, who didn't meet 2,400 gallons and were eliminated from the system. Annually, this list, if I were to provide you a complete list, would be probably about that thick. Also in your packet is a letter of support from the Agricultural Cooperative Council of Oregon. They're in full support of this bill, and I will leave you to peruse the reasons that they support that. And finally, in your packet is a letter from a carpenter down in Eugene. And I wanted to use this letter to illustrate one of the points about why we feel the 2,400-gallon requirement is unfair to small businesses. This is a guy who builds cabinets and delivers them all over the state. And when he contacted us, he said, you know, the reason that it is important to my business is that my cash flow is up and down. I'll build cabinets and deliver, and my cash flow goes up, and then it goes down. With commercial fueling, with CardLock, I'm able to prepay my gas account when my cash flow is good in anticipation of those times when it's tight. And that way, I don't have to put gas on a credit card and pay 18% interest. And that flexibility is really important to him. We just think that's a really strong illustration. There's probably a lot more companies out there in Oregon, like Front Door Woodworking, that would like to make access of this, to utilize it as a tool in the administration of their business and running their businesses, but can't because we have this arbitrary limit set in statute, 2,400 gallons. Now, in testimony that you may hear after mine, you may hear subsequent persons allude to the fact that in 1991 a deal was struck and there was a compromise. Well, this is in fact the truth, that the people that were present and party to those discussions in 1991 did, to one degree or another, buy off on those set of eligibility requirements. But it's our view that that really doesn't preclude this legislature, or hasn't precluded any subsequent legislature, from taking a look at that and seeing how that's working in actual practice in Oregon. And as the point we've tried to make, that in rural, particularly in rural areas, it's not working very well, and it's had a very deleterious effect. Also, you might hear in subsequent testimony from the retail gasoline community that it's this provision to remove it would be unfair to them. And I would remind the committee that Oregon statute permits the operation of what are known as dual facilities. Gasoline retailers can operate both a retail and a card lock facility should they so choose. In actual fact, most choose not to, just as most card lock operators choose not to operate a retail facility. For purposes of administration or whatever reasons, they choose not to do that. But in fact, it's not an unlevel playing field. Those retailers can have card lock at their stations too if they want to. Finally, I want to talk a little bit about it, especially, I think it's particularly poignant in these days of when we're facing energy problems in the United States, particularly here in the Northwest, how the 2,400-gallon really sets a sort of an adverse incentive when it comes to fuel usage in business. I was informed earlier today of a company called ACP Investigations down in the Medford area. ACP and their fleet of security vehicles used to use Ford Crown Victorias, which are a pretty big car and use quite a bit of gas. Well, a year ago, they decided to do something a little more economical, and they got rid of that fleet, and they bought smaller cars that were more gas economical. Well, lo and behold, that put them under the 2,400-gallon limit. So their access to card lock has now been eliminated by that because of their fuel conservation measures. I would submit to you that that is an adverse incentive in statute for fuel conservation that should be considered. And finally, and closing, Mr. Chair, let me raise the ultimate boogeyman, and that's self-service gas. A lot of people, when they look at issues like this, immediately get nervous and think, oh no, this is the camel's nose under the tent on self-service gas. Let me state clearly for the record that my clients, the Oregon Commercial Fueling Coalition, are opposed to retail self-service gas and believe that these are two separate and distinct subjects, and the discussion thereof should not be intermingled. Card lock facilities have been in Oregon, and there have been statutes regulating their use and operation for over 30 years. And during that entire period of time, not once has it seemed to change any lawmakers or a majority of Oregonians' mind when it comes to this subject. The legislature and Oregonians have spoken loudly and clearly. They don't want to pump their own gas, and we don't think they should, and we don't think this measure or what we're proposing in Senate Bill 461 leads us in that direction or even really opens the subject for discussion. And with that, I'll conclude my remarks, and I'd be happy to answer any questions the committee may have.
Thank you. Questions?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Gordley.
Thank you, and good afternoon, Mr. Bowe. Mm-hmm. Of the Oregon businesses eliminated from commercial fueling access, the list that you provided, mm-hmm. the 18 businesses, have any of those businesses actually gone out of business, or could you talk further about what has been the nature of the harm so we have a full mm-hmm. picture of what that is?
Certainly. Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley, I have not been able to conduct any personal investigations on those companies, so I can't answer specifically the harm, but I can answer your question, I believe, in a more generalized fashion, in that Card Lock, as illustrated by that one Carpenter's letter who I presented, provides these businesses with a way to manage and account for their fuel costs, plus provides them convenient access should they need 24-hour access to fuel. So, in terms of a negative impact, it may be more of just an encumbrance and a difficulty in the efficient administration of their business and their activity, particularly when it comes to their fleet of cars and their fuel costs and how they manage those. I don't think that anybody would get up and assert that it's put somebody out of business, but it certainly has created an unnecessary hardship for them when this is really a pretty simple, straightforward business service that's offered. And under the current statutory scheme, we've got this arbitrary 2,400 gallons limit that just says, if you use 2,400 gallons or more, you can do this. If you don't, you can't. And it's just curious to us, and our big question is, what is the underlying justification for that? Came out in 1991 as part of this compromise, but not then, and I don't think now can anybody, if one of those business owners were here, look them in the eye and say, the good reason that we do that is, somebody please fill in the blank for me, because I can't figure it out.
So to follow up, if I may, Mr. Chair, is it accurate to say then that a part of the hardship then is it's the increase in the cost of doing business? Is that a part of what you're saying?
Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley, I think that would be fair to say.
Okay. Thank you.
I got one question, Brian, and you probably don't know the answer, but 2A, 2A on the bill is deductible farm fuel that qualifies as deductible farming expenses is exempt, or if the way I read it, the owner, if you're a farmer, you don't have to use 2,400 gallons. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. My question is, on one of the businesses, it's Christopher Tree Farm, and I'm mm-hmm. familiar with that operation, and I would have thought that they would have qualified as a farmer, so I'm curious to know why they were eliminated unless they don't, and I know that as a tree farmer, you can choose to file a farm tax accounting or other methods, and maybe right. that was the reason why, but...
It may, Mr. Chair, that may well be in fact, because I believe under the regulations, if not under the statute, to qualify for the farm exemption, you have to present that particular schedule mm-hmm. as proof. Mm-hmm. If not, you would have a federal tax ID, and then you'd be thrown back into the other side of the loop where you'd have to use 2,400 gallons. So that's a good example. I mean, if they wanted to continue to use access to the Card Lock, they'd have to change their business structure to do it.
Okay. And I have one other question that, I'm trying to figure out where it is, or if I've got misinformation, but can a person purchase any amount of diesel if they're only purchasing diesel fuel and not gasoline?
Yes. I hear an echo back. Yes.
Where in the law does it say that? I'm trying to find out where that is.
And maybe you can't answer that question either, but...
Yeah, not off the top of my head, Mr. Chair, but we can look, and perhaps it's not part of the conforming amendments that are printed on the bill, and maybe there are other parts of the statute that are not...
The fire marshal can probably answer that question, so...
Okay.
Thank you, Brian.
All right.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Okay.
Is it Raleigh Bilyeu?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Raleigh Bilyeu. I pronounce it. My cousin in Lebanon with the insurance company pronounces it Bilyeu, and I wished I had his money. I live at 62830 Avenue Southeast, Albany, Oregon. And I've come here today in support of this bill. I'm retired from the State Fire Marshal's Office. I was the first person that the Fire Marshal's Office hired to establish oversight and administration of the original card lock law. And in a period of 6 years there, almost 6 years, I became probably the most experienced auditor investigator in the department. I audited almost every card lock operator at least once, all the way from Enterprise to Gold Beach to Merrill to Adel. So we've covered a lot of territory.
It's my whole district.
Yes, sir.
You sure of that?
Yes, Senator. currently, as Mr. Bowe has said, the 2,400 gallon requirement is a stipulation that says that in order to consider that you're in business, you have to purchase 2,400 gallons. In according to the statute. My contention, and it became my contention very early on, before I started with the fire marshal for about 20 years, I was privately engaged in business as a general contractor. I was disabled and couldn't do that, and I was fortunate in being able to work for the fire marshal for 6 years. I found very early on, when we were originally establishing this program, and we were going out and making card lock operators take many, many people off of the system, that it was quite discriminatory, the 2,400 gallons. And I'll just cite a couple of three examples, and I think I'll touch on one that you've brought up, Senator, Mr. Chairman. In Estacada, a Christmas tree grower had filed as a Christmas tree business and not as a farmer. In, as you know, November and December, they use a lot of gas. They were using 1,800 gallons of gas in that 2 months, but for the remainder of the year, they were only using about 200 gallons of gas. I had to tell the card lock operator that that person didn't qualify, even though the card lock operator said, this is a good customer. I'd like to keep this customer. I said, I'm sorry. The law doesn't allow that at the present time. The most glaring one that I had was in a small community, small city in central Oregon, a pharmacist, the only pharmacy in town, was using a vehicle to make deliveries in a whole big community area. They weren't using 2,400 gallons in a year, and so I had to tell this card lock operator the same thing. I'm sorry, you can't have this person as a card lock customer. Even though they were making deliveries early in the morning, late at night, they were making and serving their public. By the way, the pharmacist also happened to be the mayor of the city. And it doesn't do us very good when we tell small business people that you're not big enough to be considered a business when they are legitimately a business. There's no need for the 2,400-gallon limitation in order to establish whether a person is in business or not. That can be established by the three other criteria that are laid out. It's very simple to establish, and there's many ways that I as an auditor could determine that. And the 2,400 gallons, purely and simply, discriminates against the small business operator, and it also discriminates against the small business, the card lock operator, because numerous ones of them NISA, Ontario, Burns, Enterprise, our Oregon, have told me many times they would love to have 1,000 gallons per year customer using their card lock. They can't do it. And the only reason that I can discern that this was put into the law in the first place was to establish the limit of how big the customer should be before you issue them credit, because you do issue them credit. But the card lock operators tell me I'm smart enough to tell who I should give credit to. Why should the state of Oregon tell me who I can give credit to? So it's my contention that this is not a necessary part of the law. It discriminates against small businesses, both. Operator said, this is a good customer. I'd like to keep this customer. I said, I'm sorry. The law doesn't allow that at the present time. The most glaring one that I had was in a small community, small city in central Oregon, a pharmacist, the only pharmacy in town, was using a vehicle to make deliveries in a whole big community area. They weren't using 2,400 gallons in a year, and so I had to tell this card lock operator the same thing. I'm sorry, you can't have this person as a card lock customer. Even though they were making deliveries early in the morning, late at night, they were making and serving their public. By the way, the pharmacist also happened to be the mayor of the city. And it doesn't do us very good when we tell small business people that you're not big enough to be considered a business when they are legitimately a business. There's no need for the 2,400 gallon limitation in order to establish whether a person is in business or not. That can be established by the three other criteria that are laid out. It's very simple to establish, and there's many ways that I as an auditor could determine that. And the 2,400 gallons, purely and simply, discriminates against the small business operator, and it also discriminates against the small business, the card lock operator, because numerous ones of them, NISA, Ontario, Burns, Enterprise, our Oregon, have told me many times they would love to have 1,000 gallons per year customer using their card lock. They can't do it. And the only reason that I can discern that this was put into the law in the first place was to establish the limit of how big the customer should be before you issue them credit, because you do issue them credit. But the card lock operators tell me I'm smart enough to tell who I should give credit to. Why should the state of Oregon tell me who I can give credit to? So it's my contention that this is not a necessary part of the law. It discriminates against small businesses, both the small business owner and the small business card lock operator. If you have any questions.
Senator Harper.
Interesting. So it's your contention that that's one of the original reasons where this number came from? Because I've been struggling to find out where it came from. The credit issue, you think?
It was a credit recommendation by one of the major national card lock companies to their distributors that they only allow people that purchase at least 200 gallons a month to sign up for their card lock. That major player was a player at the table when this law was written.
Thank you.
Other questions?
Thank you very much.
Senator? Chairman?
Patrick? Is it Rogers?
Good Chair, my name is Patrick Rogers. I represent the Oregon Paralyzed Veterans of America, and we are opposed to this bill. Our main reason is we just kind of feel that this is a lead into expanding self-service. And our reasoning for being against that is we really feel that this could possibly have an adverse effect on full service out in these small rural communities. And if that were to happen, my seniors and disabled out there would lose a lot of their independence to be able to live in place. And we've seen this happen many times, where they're going to have to move into the major metropolitan areas if they want to get service. And I just don't want to see people like in Burns or Aden or Folly Farm or someplace like that have to come to Bend or Portland to live because they couldn't get drive their vehicle, couldn't get fuel. And that's just really the heart of the matter right there. So if you have any questions.
Thank you, Senator Decker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment. The committee, we all know Patrick Rogers as the face of the Oregon Paralyzed Veterans of America, but recently he was honored as Beaverton's first citizen, I believe, and him and his wife helped found the Arts Commission in Beaverton and have been just incredible citizens of our area and really helped build the community. So just wanted to...
Mr. Chair, Senator Darren, thank you. But I would much prefer that we just deal with this issue. I really am concerned about the seniors and disabled today.
It didn't divert him any. Nice try.
Any more questions, Senator Deckert?
No questions.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Mike Sherlock. And Fran.
If you don't mind, I'd bring a dealer up with me.
But I don't remember. I was just out there.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Mike Sherlock, and I'm the representing the Oregon Gasoline Dealers Association today, and we are the small retail dealers that are being discussed here. The OGDA, as a matter of policy, opposes any sort of liberalization of the current laws, rules, and regulations regarding the use of non-retail cardlock facilities in the state, and consequently, we oppose this bill. As Brian talked about previously, in the 1991 legislative session, there was a huge amount of turmoil that went on regarding how we were going to set these rules, because there were no rules about cardlock operations except that they were allowed to serve commercial customers or non-retail customers, it was called, but nobody knew what that definition was. And so the people who were in charge at that time asked all of us in the community, the business community, to come together and sit down and determine what these rules were. And we fought long and hard about it. There was a lot of give and take, and the bottom line is we came down to the 2,400-gallon limitation. We're concerned that by reopening this issue in Senate Bill 461, that we'd reopen the subject of the whole retail, non-retail, attended, unattended, and other matters related to gasoline dispensing. And a lot of those other matters are going to be self-service. It's our attitude that we have come to this compromise so that everyone knows what the rules are. The system is working just fine right now. But if we're going to allow more access to self-serve for one segment of the industry, maybe we should consider allowing it the same kind of access to all segments of the industry. We'd rather not fight that fight. We've been there a million times. I notice Ken Strobeck's back here, and he fought long and hard for the whole self-service concept. And I think all of us who are involved think we came to this agreement. Let's just leave it alone. Some specific things that were brought up are particularly the way this affects rural areas. The proponents of this bill are talking about the problem that rural cardlock operators have if they if they're not allowed more access to the marketplace. I'd like to point out that right now most of the rural gasoline dealers, the retail dealers, they're hanging on by the skin of their teeth right now. If you allow a bigger portion of the marketplace to go to the cardlock operations, which have significantly lower costs of operations because they don't have to hire employees, you're going to be putting out of business a lot of the small rural gasoline dealers that are out there. Unfortunately, we had such short notice on this particular bill, I was not able to bring any of those people here today. But if we revisit this sometime down the road, we can bring in a number of people who will tell you, just plain and simple, if this law passes, they're going to be put out of business. And if we put out the regular retail dealers in these small rural communities, what's going to be left? If the only thing left in the marketplace is card locks, what about the tourists who are coming through? What about people who don't have enough credit to sign up for a card lock? You know, what about the people who don't qualify for the card locks? So this bill would just be a travesty for small rural dealers. We've been working really hard. We've given them grants for replacing their underground storage tanks, a number of things, just trying to keep them in business. This would really hurt them. Brian mentioned the concept of the dual facility as a way that a retail dealer can compete with the card locks. That sounds good on the surface. The problem is the rules for a dual facility are really preclude any practical operation except in a really large operation. Particularly, there's a requirement that card lock pumps be removed from regular retail pumps by 50 feet. Well, you know, that is going to be very impractical for a small rural station. And then I thought it was quite interesting that there was talking of how that particular coalition who's proposing this is opposed to retail self-serve. They're obviously not unopposed to non-retail self-serve. Once again, we think that it goes back to what's good for the goose is good for the gander. We need a level playing field. We feel the current rules allow that level playing field, and we think that we'd really appreciate if you defeated Senate Bill 461. I have with me Brent DeHart, who is a Shell dealer from here in Salem, and he would like to make a few comments.
Committee Chair, members of the committee, my name is Brent DeHart, resident here in Salem. I operate two gasoline stations. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you today. I must confess I was surprised, and I was not prepared today to hear what a hardship it was not to have self-serve. It's kind of amusing to me to hear that people are overwhelmingly hardshipped case because they don't have self-serve. In the state of Oregon, that seems incongruous somehow. I need to step back about a half a step in history when I talk about Senate Bill 1215. Prior to that, you may be interested to know that non-retail sales, non-retail fuel sales didn't exist. That word didn't exist. It was not defined into law until Senate Bill 1215. There was a group of dealers that filed suit against the state of Oregon fire marshal and said, hey, these guys have self-serve and it's against the law. And this is the previous fall before that session. And it was an overwhelming decision to the fire marshal, mandating the fire marshal enforce the self-serve law, whether it be cash or credit, card lock network, or otherwise, that there was no basis in the law whatsoever to exempt these people from selling without attended service. And therefore, in the compromise that everyone has been referring to, that definition of non-retail fuel was created. And so the compromise... is coming from a place where they were on the same playing. They were going to be forced to operate on the same playing field we were, with attended service, regardless of method of payment. Self-service is so alive and well in Oregon. It's just not alive and well for people who pay cash. It seems inherently unfair, but now is written in a statute due to that compromise, and we would be against dilution of that compromise. We were asked earlier testimony. We do this because why? We do this so that card lock operators, credit operators, don't drive more of the retail operators out of business than they already have, and therefore benefit at the expense of the general public. Because their benefit to them, where's the benefit to the general public, the benefit to the local dealers that already exist that employ the people? In addition to the impacts estimates, I would include, I think we should include the lost revenue of taxpayer dollars when the jobs are lost at the retail portion, as more and more retail sites get closed out of business, as you open up the floodgates for more business to escape away from a retail purchase into a non-retail purchase. I personally just don't buy the argument that it's a hardship for a carpenter to prepay his Visa bill instead of his Pacific Pride bill. Doesn't seem like it's too much of a of a hardship for a small business. And I didn't hear any testimony that cars are left stranded on the side of the road all through the middle of the night in the freeze, seeing because they didn't have access to fuel. So Mr. Sherlock said, they oppose self-service at the retail level. Of course they oppose self-service at the retail level. They already have the advantage of having self-service, and they don't want anybody else to have it, and they want some of their own constraints removed so they can offer it to more Oregonians. Thank you.
We'd be happy to answer any kind of questions you have.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Gorman.
Thank you to the gentleman on my right, and I'm sorry.
Mike Sherlock.
Mr. Sherlock.
Sherlock.
Thank you. You said that most of rural gasoline dealers are holding on by the skin of their teeth. I'd like to know something more about that. How many small retail dealers are there in rural Oregon?
I don't have those numbers on the top of my head, but I'd be happy to get those to you.
Is there some evidence that you're looking at that leads you to that conclusion of most rural gasoline dealers are holding on by the skin of their teeth?
That comes mostly from just a matter of interacting with the people that are out there. Also, I was on the advisory committee that allocated the grant money for small rural dealers to upgrade their underground storage tanks. And many of those people got like $50,000 to allow them to replace their tanks and come up to the environmental standards that were required. And it was very clear from my participation on that committee that the majority of those people, if they hadn't gotten that grant, would have just had to shut the doors. So I'd be happy to get back to you with the with some more specific numbers, but I just don't have those on the top of my head.
Mr. Chair,
go ahead.
That additional information would be helpful to me, particularly since you are stating that this policy, if it were implemented, would put folks out of business. So it would be helpful to know, what does that big picture look like? How many businesses are we talking about? Is it one? Is it more than that? So that we're dealing with something more than anecdotal. I can accept anecdotal to a point, but if there's other evidence that we should be looking at, then I'd like to be able to do that.
I'll be happy to get that information to you.
Thank you.
Thank you. You made a comment about the fact that the card locks could offer a lower cost because of the lower number of attendants to use that needed. Did I hear that correctly?
That may be what I said. What I was talking about is in the marketplace, they have a competitive advantage because they don't have to pay employees. In many cases, the fuel is more expensive at a card lock than it is at a retail station. I don't know that there's a direct correlation. What I meant to say was the card locks have a competitive advantage because they don't have to pay people to pump the gas into their customers' cars.
Okay, well, I'm glad you clarified that because as a card lock member myself, holder, I find that I normally do pay more per gallon than what I could if I went across the street to Mr. DeHart's service station, but it's a convenience factor for me and a time issue. And if, in fact, they do have lower costs, but they're charging more, why are they gouging me?
I can't answer that. You may want to talk to...
Real question. Yeah. Why are you going to them?
Yeah.
Well, I think I already said why I'm going to them, because it's a time of day issue, it's a convenience issue, and there's a multiple number of reasons why I use card locks. And you said, it's also said that it's really hard for, almost impossible for rural Oregon, you know, i.e. card lock or dual facilities to exist because of things. Yet, in my experience traveling through Senator Harper's district, I find very many dual facilities out there. So I don't understand how it is so hard for them to do this if that's what's there. I mean, that's what I see when I go there. And it's an issue then if the pump is open, many people, myself included, will pull up and have someone fill my tank while I'm using the restroom. If it's 10 o'clock at night or sometimes later,
Sometimes earlier.
Sometimes earlier. I'll pull up, and there won't be anyone there, and I have no other choice but to use the card lock, because that's all that's in the town. And I have that ability because I use more than 2,400 gallons a year. Mm-hmm. So I have that option. So I don't understand why you were saying that this is an issue, because I found myself in Paisley, Oregon that before where they didn't have it, the card lock that I had. So I had to wait until the next morning until the fuel station opened before I could get fuel. So it's a convenience factor in rural Oregon that is, you know, I see really important. Senator Atkins, can you have a question?
Well, just a comment. I spent a lot of time in Senator Harper's district and know quite a few of those operators who operate small, and I had this conversation this last summer. I said, isn't there an incentive if what Mr. Drake was saying about being on the skin of your teeth, isn't there incentive for you to gouge the prices of tourists that are coming by, essentially? I mean, these are towns like Fields, Rome, French Glen.
Oh my God.
Adele, Plush. I mean, it's kind of interested in this. And all those places I've just mentioned, all of them have, stores and other things associated with the. I said, isn't there an incentive for you, though, to jack the price up since you're the only show in town? And on my own non-scientific, just curious, curiosity, most of them said, half of those that I just listed would say, no, they're actually pretty competitively priced because they're going to make the money elsewhere. They're going to make the money on food, or they're going to make the money on hot chocolate or whatever happens to pass by. So the skin of your teeth thing, I also had a little mental hiccup there because I know a lot of those guys, and I can tell you some of them are hanging on, but it's for a variety of issues, and some of them are hanging on. Some of them have been helped by the tank removal. Some of them have been damaged by the tank removal in terms of cash flow. There's a lot of other factors out there, I think, is my comment.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. And I'm going to ask the fire marshal person to come up and maybe find out why some of these rural tank or rural stations are going out of business. I know in my own town, it has not been the fact that there are card locks available. It's the fact that it's the tank removal. And then not so much the cost of the tank removal, but the insurance requirements if they put a new tank in that drives them out of business. And that's the people in my town have told me who used to operate small independent service stations who are now no longer do. And it never was mentioned the fact that we have three card locks down the street. It was the fact that I can't afford the insurance on that new tank they're going to put in the ground. So.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think what you're saying is exactly right. It's not any one thing that is causing the people to go out of business. There's a number of pressures on them, and changing this 2,400-gallon requirement, which would allow some of their customers to go away and buy their gas somewhere else, just puts additional pressure on them. And that's what my point was.
Okay. More questions? Thank
Mr.
you very much.
Well, I just think Mr. Sherlock makes a good point. I didn't catch the first part of the testimony, but I think I've been going back and forth on this thing, and that, to me, is the compelling issue when you get to a small, Oak Ridge, some of these small communities where...
Ridge isn't small.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's all relative, I guess.
Major metropolitan area there, buddy.
Silverton. But anyway, that you do, it is just another factor that has a negative impact on the ones that do provide the service. So I can... sympathize with that, and I realize that the tank removal, that's been a big issue in my district, and that creates costs, there's no doubt about it, but at least that one's spread out, that's equal to both card locks and non-card locks.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Deckard.
I did not know that y'all had hot chocolate at your, we don't have hot chocolate at our service stations.
We don't have lattes.
Oh, lattes. We do have lattes. Boy, do we have lattes.
No wonder you've never been able to get one.
We don't have those either.
Boy, do we have lattes, I'll tell you. Or lattes.
They don't allow them in.
We can't even pronounce them.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Think you mispronounced anything as you were landing one of those big airplanes?
Before you come up, the fire marshal, I want to ask them a couple questions. Is that okay with you? Even though you're signed up in front of them, because they're not signed up? Thank you for letting me to put you on the spot.
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, my name is Bob Albers. I am the Hazmat Services Manager for the Office of State Fire Marshal. One of the programs that I provide management oversight for is the Cardlock non-retail fuel dispensing program. I'm here to answer any of the questions you have. One of the questions that came up, the question about diesel fuel. The rules pertaining to non-retail apply to Class 1 flammables. Diesel is not a Class 1 flammable and is not subject to the Cardlock regulations. There are self-service or Cardlock type operations for diesel fuel all throughout the state.
So if I am a small businessman who drives a diesel truck rather than a gasoline truck, I can get a Cardlock and use 100 gallons a year?
Chair Beyer, that is correct.
Okay. That's good to know.
What's the rationale for that, Mr.
There
Chair?
Chair Beyer, Senator Deckard, the last gentleman referred to the lawsuit that against the State Fire Marshal's office back in 1990, having to do with allowing for self-service of gasoline. The issue is around gasoline. Gasoline is a Class 1 flammable, and the rules and regulations, the prohibition that the state of Oregon has had on gasoline is for Class 1 flammables. Included in that, I might add, is aviation fuel. Aviation fuel is a Class 1 flammable.
Which is number 2 diesel fuel, right?
It's jet fuel.
Okay.
Well, jet fuel is kerosene.
Okay. I've got a note here that says that prior to 91, there were roughly 60,000 users, i.e. cardholders in the state. Now there's 39,000. Is that number accurate?
Chair Beyer, in 1991, when the Cardlock regulations went into effect, at that time there were 65,000 non-retail fuel customers.
65,000.
We currently have approximately 39,000 Cardlock customers that are paying Cardlock customer fees.
Which everyone who uses a Cardlock has to pay a $5 annual fee.
Chair Beyer, that is correct.
Okay. How many Cardlock facilities are there in the state now versus then, or do you have that number?
Chair Beyer, there are 344 Cardlock facilities licensed in the state of Oregon. There are 140 Cardlock companies in the state.
Currently?
Currently.
Do you know what the numbers were in 91 or prior to 91?
Chair Beyer, I don't have those figures here with me. Let me look here real quick. Maybe I got something on that. The numbers that I have, the number of customers in 96, 97 was 37,800. The next biennium, it was 40,000. Then it was 39,000. Then it dropped to 38,000, just under 39,000. But I don't have that far back with me, but I can get that information for you if you'd like.
But you don't have the number of stations. Not customers. I'm asking about stations.
Number of Cardlock stations facility, at that time.
Yeah.
Chair Beyer, I don't have that information with me, but we'll dig it out and we'll get that information for you.
Thank you. And then I don't think you guys are the ones that would regulate. Maybe you are the ones that regulate normal service stations, but are you? As far as licensing them and.
Chair Beyer, we do have a role in regulation of retail fuel fueling operations in a couple of different ways in those areas of the state where the station is located that is not in an exempt jurisdiction. The state fire marshals, deputy fire marshals, would be required to enforce fire code there. As it relates to self-service, the Cardlock unit is responsible. responsible for enforcing the prohibition against self-service in the state of Oregon.
Okay. But you wouldn't probably won't be able to answer the question as to why some of these people have gone out of business in the last 10 years. I mean, is it card lock versus underground tank storage problems or...
Chair Beyer, I couldn't provide you that kind of information. There was a study that was done in 91. I don't remember if that study was relative to this, but again, we'll go back at the office and we'll take a look at that and see if anything came up on that. But I'm not knowledgeable of that kind of information. I've been involved in the card lock program since its inception back in 91. I've been with the Fire Marshal's office since 88. I have only within the last 5-6 years had direct involvement with the program. Actually was involved with it when I first started up and actually creating some of the scheduling programs and some of the rules that were used to implement it. But we have not had that question asked of us before. So, okay. But we will look and see if we have anything that can help you with that.
Thank you. Was there any questions? I've grilled them long enough. Thanks a lot for volunteering to come forward. Rob, for being volunteered.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Rob Douglas, representing Truax Harris Energy. Truax Harris Energy is a commercial card lock franchisee, but they also, and this is important, I think, for this debate, operate a large number, an equal number of retail service stations. Prior to 1991, there was no statutory definition of commercial fueling or card lock. There was instead a series of attorney general opinions, attorney general letters, and most of those related, they didn't even call it card lock back then, Mr. Chairman, they called it key lock. And these sort of came out over time. People have talked today about the 200 gallon or 2400
The numbers that I have, the number of customers in 96, 97 was 37,800. The next biennium, it was 40,000. Then it was 39,000. Then I dropped to 38,000, just under 39,000. But I don't have that far back with me, but I can get that information for you if you'd like.
But you don't have the number of stations. Not customers. I'm asking about stations.
Number of... Card lock stations at that time.
Yeah.
Chair Beyer, I don't have that information with me, but we'll dig it out and we'll get that information for you.
Thank you. And then I don't think you guys are the ones that would regulate. Maybe you are the ones that regulate normal service stations, but are you? As far as you know, licensing them and.
Chair Beyer, we do have a role in regulation of retail fueling operations in a couple of different ways in those areas of the state where the station is located that is not in an exempt jurisdiction. The state fire marshals, deputy fire marshals, would be required to enforce fire code there. As it relates to self-service, the card lock unit is responsible for enforcing the prohibition against self-service in the state of Oregon.
Okay, but you wouldn't probably be able to answer the question as to why some of these people have gone out of business in the last 10 years. I mean, is it card lock versus underground tank storage problems or...
Chair Beyer, I couldn't provide you that kind of information. There was a study that was done in 91. I don't remember if that study was relative to this, but again, we'll go back at the office and we'll take a look at that and see if anything came up on that. But I'm not knowledgeable of that kind of information. I've been involved in the card lock program since its inception back in 91. I've been with the Fire Marshal's office since 88. I have only within the last five five, 6 years had direct involvement with the program. Actually was involved with it when it first started up, and actually creating some of the scheduling programs and some of the rules that that were used to implement it. But we never, we have not had that question asked of us before. So, okay. But we will look and see if we have anything that can help you with that.
Thank you. Those any questions? I've grilled them long enough. Thanks a lot for volunteering to come forward. Rob, or being volunteered.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Rob Douglas, representing Truax Harris Energy. Truax Harris Energy is a commercial card lock franchisee, but they also, and this is important, I think, for this debate, operate a large number, an equal number of retail service stations. Prior to 1991, there was no statutory definition of commercial fueling or card lock. There was instead a series of attorney general opinions, attorney general letters, and most of those related, they didn't even call it card lock back then, Mr. Chairman, they called it key lock. And these sort of came out over time. People have talked today about the 200 gallon or 2,400 gallons a year figure. Where did that figure come from? It came from one of those attorney general writings about gallonage and commercial fueling and the requirements. We urge you to vote no on Senate Bill 461. This is very similar to other bills that have been before this body. I think the number last session was Senate Bill 957. We continue to support the 200 gallon a month or 2,400 gallon limit. We think that has two advantages. The first advantage is that that number was the result of a very hard-fought bargain between the commercial card lock fueling folks and the retail dealers. And keep in mind, this is before there was a statutory definition. There was a lot of question about whether or not commercial card lock fueling could even exist in the state of Oregon. The second reason is this has been tested. It's been tested through the courts, all the way up through the Oregon State Supreme Court, and it's been ratified by the courts. So people can say it's arbitrary, it's unfair. It does have the advantage of being in statute for 10 years. It does have the advantage of being challenged, and it does have the advantage to having survived that challenge.
Rob, what was challenged exactly and what survived? Was it the gallonage limitation?
That was part of it, yes, Mr. Chairman.
What case? I think we've got that. Is that the one, Southern Wasco County versus... No.
Don't think that's the case I have here. I think it was... That was one of the cases, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, because we've got a letter here from Legislative Council saying that this statute clearly would not be unconstitutional, and they cite that case, saying that that was decided on something else. Anyway.
Mr. Chairman, you have me at a disadvantage. I've not seen the Legislative Council opinion, but in terms of the statutory framework for the regulation of commercial fueling, the courts have stated that as well within the police powers of the state. And it has survived challenges.
Okay. I catch you. Go ahead and finish. I'm sorry.
No, that was it, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Everyone I have that signed up, Paul, come on up.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Paul Romaine. I represent the Oregon Petroleum Marketers Association. With me is Cliff Olson with Mark Nelson Oil, no relationship to the lobbyist, and Steve O'Toole, who is the executive director of the Oregon Petroleum Marketers Association. And contrary to Willamette Week, I've never been in the legislature.
Yeah, we've really felt
impugned at that.
You think you had problems. I was really trying to live it down for a few hours.
Yeah. Who sues whom?
All right, let's move on.
Moving right along. We did want to point out one thing. You might want to ask the fire marshal about the exact effect of Senate Bill 461. Being very familiar with very poor legislative drafting, being the subject of something right now because of poor legislative drafting, when you read Section 1 of the bill, you may be totally eliminating non-retail card lock. Because the way the bill is written, because of the and down on line 30, it means that all of the following requirements must be kept. So if you don't have two, which is farm expense or government agency providing fire, ambulance, or police, you may not be able to have a card lock. And we want you to keep card lock. We like card lock. So please ask the fire marshal about the proper interpretation of the statute, of this, the way this is drafted, if you are going to do anything with the bill, please. Second of all, the concern is, from our perspective, is we don't mind if you went to self-service for everybody. We really don't. That we think that's fine. That's a policy decision that you make. Now, you know, it happens to be the holy grail of this state that you're not going to go to self-service, but basically what you do with a system like this is you take a compromise that was made a long time ago, in 91, and you basically come down to a situation where if you have a business ID, you can go in and pump your own gas, but if you're a teacher or a laborer or somebody who works for somebody else and doesn't have that business ID, you can't. So you have, in spite of what the people say, you have one system where you can pump your own gas and one system where you can't. And you are shifting gallons from one system to another. Again, this is your policy decision. We happen to think you'd be better off if there are businesses that you may want to tweak the gallonage a little bit, kind of play with that a little bit. And we'll live with whatever you put out. It's fine. We'll live with whatever you do. But you're really setting up two systems. And that's sort of your policy decision, but we've kind of scratched our head and trying to figure out why you're doing that. But the most important thing is before you do anything with 461, I would really check how it's drafted, because I think you might have nuked non-retail card lock. Thank you. You have anything you want to add?
Unless you want some clarification on what we were talking about.
No, I'm just trying to read it, and the way I read it, Paul, is that because you have to have both 5 and 6, is that what you're saying?
Well, the drafting, I've been through this stuff, but if you read the beginning of 480-345, uh-huh, the first line, 6 through 10,
mm-hmm,
it says you can do all this stuff under the following conditions,
mm-hmm,
okay? And then 1 through 6 are the following conditions. And if you put an and after 5, right. If you put an and after 5, that means you have to comply with all of those conditions. If you put an or after 5, you could be any one of those things. But the way it's drafted, the proper reading of this, the way it's drafted, is you would have to comply with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6.
That's current language.
Right, that is current language. But what you've done is eliminated 2.
And
But not A and B from 2. You now have 2A, 2B, but you've eliminated the provision that says that you must purchase at least 2,400 gallons. What you've said is that under 2, the only requirement under 2, which is part of an and, it's part of the list, is to qualify for 2, you have to have a deductible farming expense or be purchased by a governmental agency. If, under my reading of this, and I believe the fire marshal's reading of this, if that is the fact, if that is, then you've eliminated card lock. And we don't want you to do that. So please check this before you move forward, no matter what policy decision you make on this. I think you have an ambiguity here that you really want to check. And believe me, I've been through ambiguities before.
But let me clarify. We would have eliminated it, maybe, potentially, card lock for anyone who isn't a farmer or doesn't run ambulance
right.
or services.
Right.
Which I can live with that personally.
Yeah. And that may be your policy decision, but you might want to know these things ahead of time. And,
Thank you for pointing that out, Paul. Any questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
With that, we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 461, and we have a potential fiscal impact. We do not have a fiscal statement, and we have a potential drafting error.
But other than that, how do you like the bill, Mr. Chair?
We're adjourned.
We're adjourned.